the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Joining you once again, the Milwaukee Bucks are still steamrolling the NBA, winning their first three games right out of the chute, coming out of the All-Star break, including a tense game over Boston, a game without Giannis. It's same old. The Bucks are just, plain and simple, the best team in the NBA. Maybe even one of the best teams ever. We're kind of getting to that point, aren't we? I'm J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. On the other line is Matt Velasquez. He is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering this team, watching them win game after game after game. Are you getting bored of this, Matt? Because every night, what do we even talk about? Why are we even here? There's nothing to talk about. The Bucks just win everything.
Well, I mean, they do. but we do have plenty to talk about. Lots of things going on. You know, they're kind of just a machine. I mean, they've been doing what they've done all season. They play really well. They play the same scheme. They have little twists here and there. But they know who they are. They know what they want to do, and then they go out and they do it. It's something that is pretty impressive to see the consistency of what they've been able to do. It isn't really, you know, you wouldn't say that it's necessarily exciting, or maybe it is, but you know, you could argue that other teams are more dramatic. With the Bucks, you know, winning with a point differential of, you know, almost 10, which is elite, which puts you among, you know, some of the best teams that the league has seen over the course of its history. I mean, not a lot of teams have a point differential like that for a whole season. But by having that point differential, it just means that you're winning a lot of games by double digits, and that's definitely something they've been doing. Which, like I said, doesn't necessarily lead to a lot of dramatic or close finishes. But you know, as Giannis said and Bud said after, you know, a game against the Timberwolves this week where they won 140-128, you know, where they neither of them was really happy about, you know, giving up 128 points. They're like, yeah, well, 140 points, like, can't argue with that. A win's a win. We'll take it.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, if you want dramatic basketball in the Wisconsin and Milwaukee market, you're just going to have to follow college hoops because Wisconsin and Marquette, they'll provide for you. The Bucks, that's not where it's at. And I was kidding about one of the best teams of all time, but that point differential, like you said, that's truly elite. That's not just best in the NBA. That's best that that's among the best teams in really in NBA history. So obviously nobody is associating the Bucks quite at that level, but they maybe kind of are going to start getting into that conversation. And that's kind of my first question for you. You see the Bucks after their 117-106 win over the Bulls on Monday night creep into the top of the ESPN power rankings. They bypass the Golden State Warriors. I do think the Bucks are getting a fair amount of national attention. I do not think they're getting as much as they potentially could. And I know this is irrelevant to the Bucks. This is, you know, irrelevant to many fans too. Who cares what national pundits are saying or what the impression is of the Bucks? But you hear guys like, I know you're going to eye roll at this, but Colin Cowherd, Stephen A. Smith, still believing even in recent comments that the Bucks are not the team to beat in the East or are vulnerable for some reason, maybe because they haven't won playoff series in recent years. I don't know. But it seems to me that there's still a little bit of a hesitance to truly accept the Bucks as the team in the East, if not the team in the NBA, which the latter I can understand a little bit more. But what is your impression of the national perception? Do you think the Bucks have gotten their due on a national scale, or do you feel like there is, and maybe what the reasons would be, sort of a hesitance to embrace this team?
Yeah, I think that the people who are analytically inclined have gotten over their hesitancy with the Bucks. I think they look at, you know, the numbers, and they look at the consistency and what the Bucks have been able to do all season, and they say, wow, this is a team that's built to go far and can get to the Eastern Conference Finals, the NBA Finals, and they wouldn't really blink their eyes. You know, it's you know, like I said, the point differential, the net rating, like, at this point in the season, like, those are things that you know, I know NBA coaches have brought up. I know that executives look at, you know, that people who are analyzing the game, you know, definitely weight heavily, and the Bucks have the best point differential, the best net rating, and like that usually bears out as the team that, you know, is really, you know, the one to beat, at least in their own conference. You know, I think the specter of the Warriors hangs over the NBA, where, you know, once they get into playoff mode, it's hard to bet against them. I wouldn't advise it. You know, it's kind of the LeBron effect where, you know, you don't believe it's that they're not the best until, you know, until they actually lose. Then you're like, oh, wow, they actually lost. I guess they're not the best anymore. You know, kind of similar with LeBron James where, you know, you believe he's going to make the playoffs. You know, that, you know, for the past 8 years, you believe he's going to make the finals until proven otherwise. So the Bucks are just kind of in a situation where, you know, those people have adopted them. But, you know, people who talk about the game for a living, or, you know, maybe some who write about the game for a living, just haven't seen enough from them to believe that they don't have that, like, that team, that roster set up that a lot of recent teams have had with just a ton of stars. And, you know, they'll fill in the blanks from there. You know, they don't have a big three. They don't have a, you know, LeBron plus multiple all-stars. They just don't have that setup. But, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo is obviously, you know, already at 24, a transcendent star. Chris Middleton is an all-star. The Bucks have this, you know, well put together roster, you know, that has depth from 1 to 12. I mean, really, if you want to go that deep with it, and they know how they play, they can play different types of ways depending on the opponent. They've won regardless of venue. They have one of the best home records in the league, and they have the best road record in the league. You know, they've beaten playoff teams from up and down both conferences, but they still haven't done it in the playoffs. They still haven't won a playoff series since 2001. And, you know, oh, Bud, you know, had a team that won 60 games in 2015, but didn't make the finals. And it's like, okay, well, if people want to hold on to those arguments, that's fine. You know, I would argue that this Bucks team is better than that Hawks team because they do have a star. They do have a go-to guy that the Hawks, you know, they had really solid players, but they didn't have someone who was ever considered one of the best players, if not the best player in the NBA. They didn't have an MVP favorite. And that still team still made the Eastern Conference Finals and was derailed by LeBron James. And this Bucks team, they won't have LeBron in the way. I mean, the East is open. They have winning records against each of the teams that they're contending with. You know, and if it comes down to the fact that some people won't believe in them until they see it, well, then we'll have to just see what happens.
Let's talk about one of those teams that they're contending with. On Thursday, national television, right out of the All-Star break, the Bucks beat the Boston Celtics 98-97. It wasn't a pretty basketball game, but it was yet another victory. We're not accustomed to seeing the Bucks have to sweat it out in the final seconds, as they did in this case. Got a defensive stop right at the buzzer. Bill Simmons was sad. Everybody's happy in Milwaukee as a result. The Bucks still have not been beaten by the same team twice this season. Boston had as good a chance as anybody to pull that off and did not. This is a Celtics team that has disappointed to a degree. They do have a superstar talent in Kyrie Irving. You know, Gordon Hayward maybe hasn't been what he was before his injury last season, but he's certainly somebody you have to keep an eye on. Al Horford, we've talked about him on the podcast before about how he poses a problem most teams don't offer that the Bucks maybe would struggle matching up with the way they play defense, and certainly we saw Horford hit a couple shots in that game as well. This is a possible 1-4 matchup in the second round of the NBA playoffs at this point, and if not there, the Celtics are one of those teams that the Bucks could very easily face at some point in the postseason. What do you make of this matchup? The Celtics have beaten the Bucks this season, which came early in the year. I believe that was their first loss of the year, and the Bucks have also taken care of Boston a couple times. What do you make of that matchup? Where do you think the Bucks would have trouble with Boston, and where do you think the Bucks have an edge?
You know, I think that you're right in saying that this game on Thursday was ugly. You know, just the Bucks were kind of, you know, an offensive mess coming out of the All-Star break, and so were the Celtics. And, you know, there was some good defense, you could say that, but mostly it was just ugly. Poor shooting and rusty and all that type of stuff. But it ended up being a fun game. When you look at the Celtics, I think this will be the team the Bucks will see in the second round of the playoffs. Right now, the Celtics are 9 games back of the Bucks. They're 5th in the East. You know, I think that by the end of the season, you know, maybe they'll get to 4th, maybe they'll stay in 5th, but I would expect that they would beat the team that I expect to be in, you know, in that matchup, the Indiana Pacers. I think that the Celtics would have enough talent and figure it out with enough time to take that matchup. So, you know, that would be my prediction. I've said that a few times, and I, you know, still believe that to be true. And the Celtics will make it tough on them. I mean, the Celtics are definitely, you know, very talented, have a deep roster, have guys who have been there before, you know, without Kyrie, without Hayward last year. You know, this team still went to the Eastern Conference Finals, and a lot of those guys are still there. You know, they have somebody in Al Horford who has given the Bucks fits in the two games that he's played this season. You know, as a pick and pop five, he's who can create and, you know, is very unselfish, rebounds well, plays solid defense, is just a, you know, all around just like great veteran player. You know, he forces Brook Lopez out of the paint. And if Brook doesn't get out of the paint to defend him, then Horford has room to shoot, to create, to move the ball around. And defensively, you know, he may not have the size of some other centers, but he holds his own. He definitely gave Giannis some trouble last year in the playoffs, in the post. And it's just smart. So he definitely is kind of the crux of the team that, the Bucks have struggled against. You know, the one game the Bucks won in Boston, Horford didn't play, Marcus Morris didn't play, on Thursday, Gordon Hayward didn't play. So they haven't really gotten the full Celtics. They haven't beaten the full Celtics this season, and they won't see them again. But I think overall, the Bucks, you know, even though they lost that first game in Boston against that full Celtics team, they got down by a bunch, but then roared back, and were actually able to make that game close and nearly tied it, despite, I think Boston made like 22 threes and they shot a really high percentage. So, you know, it's one of those, I guess, moral victories where you say, well, they had to shoot, you know, insanely good from three in order to beat the Bucks. And I guess you kind of just, if you're the Bucks, you can kind of trust and hope that they won't shoot that well again. But overall, I mean, that would be a knockdown, dragout series, one that if it went any fewer than six games would shock me, because I think both those teams are really good and, you know, would treat us to some fun basketball.
Let's talk about the end of that Celtics game. At the risk of dwelling on the Celtics, like the aforementioned Bill Simmons, that game ended in sort of a bizarre fashion. The Bucks, with 3 seconds left, had a jump ball facing a shot clock violation. It was less than a second, 0.2 on the clock, in fact. And Giannis tipped it to Brook Lopez, who tipped it seemingly right at the hoop and drew rim. The Bucks get the rebound. That should have pretty much ended the game, and yet they called the shot clock violation, gave the Celtics one last look. And then there were a number of plays in that final possession. Celtics ended up missing a shot. A number of plays that the NBA came back and said were officiated incorrectly, and this tip play was also on that list. So, I mean, what chaos? Like, what did you think in the moment? Were you confused? I'm personally confused how anybody could have seen that play, the one with Giannis tipping it to Brook Lopez, and believed Brook Lopez possessed the ball enough to initiate the shot clock violation. But, I mean, do you feel like either, since both sides kind of got the benefit of no calls or incorrect calls there, do you feel like anybody kind of got away with one there? Or like, how do you interpret the final seconds of that crazy finish?
You know, I think that, yes, I was definitely confused. I was like, I thought that the rule was the clock didn't start until someone other than one of the guys involved in the jump ball touched the ball. And then I was like, well, maybe it's not. Maybe like the clock starts when the jump ball gets tipped. Like,
I thought the exact same thing. I thought, man, fundamentally, I might be getting this wrong.
Yeah, I was like, that's the only rational explanation, because I understand that with less than 0.3, you cannot attempt a shot. That, like, by rule, a shot that involves possession of the ball and shooting the ball takes at least 0.3 seconds. But it looked like, you know, Brooke put his hands up, like open palms, and did like a volleyball set, like towards the hoop, kind of just slapped the ball. And I thought that was good. Like, that was something, that's exactly what you want to do in that situation. I can't understand, you know, what else you can do. And for them to call a shot clock violation, I thought I must have not known the rule, or you know, thought, you know, whatever the rule was might have been, I don't know. I was confused. But, you know, and you know, reading the last 2-minute report the next day, obviously they misapplied the rule. I guess it's not reviewable. they thought that he possessed the ball and tried to shoot it and, you know, out of hand just called the shot clock violation, which was, you know, which was later deemed to be the incorrect call. And so, yes, that would have ended the game because that the ball hits the rim, Brogdon gets the rebound, and they'd already blown the whistle. You know, Brogdon kind of just flipped up like a, you know, a little layup that missed. But if they had, even if that did happen, you know, even if, you know, Brogdon does, you know, put it right back as a missed layup, there's no way the Celtics get that rebound in time to call a timeout and get off a shot. I think that that would have effectively ended the game. There was just too much, you know, chaos there under the hoop for that to have been the case. But then at the other end, a lot of people were like, oh, well, didn't Marcus Smart hold the ball in the inbound for more than 5 seconds? And that was not the case. The referees reviewed that. You know, in the last 2 minute report the next day, said that he, you know, he didn't possess it for 5 seconds. He got it in time. But while he was waiting to get it in, Kyrie Irving set an illegal screen on Chris Middleton. Middleton then got around that illegal screen and basically almost tackled Marcus Morris. Neither of those fouls were called. The ball gets sent in to Kyrie, and he's converged upon by Giannis and Eric Bledsoe. Bledsoe should have been called on a foul there, according to the refs. Giannis, based on enhanced video, could have been called for a foul, but when they you know, make a call based on enhanced video, they don't say whether a call was correct or incorrect. They just say, hey, you know, we observed this in advanced video. We get it, but, you know, that's the judgment call. So just kind of just general chaos going on at the end. I think that based on that situation, you know, the Bucks were wronged first. That, like, they should have, if they were getting everything right, the latter fouls don't happen. But you just kind of wish that a play like that could be reviewable to figure out, did he get it off his hands in time? You know, because I think it's reviewable if the question is whether or not he hit the rim. I think we ran into this last year with Giannis's game-ending dunk against the Thunder, where they could review it if the question was whether or not it hit the rim in time. But it's not a question of, like, they can't review it if they're looking to see if it got off his hands in time. I don't know. Just, you wish you could review it and figure it out and get it right in the moment, because we do have the technology.
Yeah, if I recall that play, Giannis steps out of bounds, but they can't review it, something about to the effect of they have to gauge the action that came after that. They can't just imagine that he was out of bounds and then reset history and start the clock from that point, which makes no sense to me. Of course they can. So just a weird, like the NFL, maybe not quite as convoluted, but there are some things that could stand to be looked at again. The Lopez thing, clear as day on replay to me, and clear in the moment, to be honest, that he tipped the ball. He never possessed that ball, but all's well that ends well, I guess, for the Bucks. Again, not often do they have to face these tense final moments since they've been winning by 10 points a game. The addition of Nikola Mirotic finally yielded some fruit. We finally saw him play in these first three games out of the All-Star break, as expected. He was on a little bit of a minutes limit against Boston, didn't do a whole lot in that game. He scored 17 points against the Timberwolves in the Bucks' 140-128 victory a couple nights later. He scored 13 points against the Bulls on Monday night. Very much looks the part of what you'd expect. He's a guy who's capable of shooting, and even if we're not even seeing the shots fall yet, but we're seeing teams react to him being on the floor, the space that it creates, it's almost its own its own virtue without even having him make shots, which of course he's capable of doing. What just real quick, a couple thoughts on what you've seen from Mirotic in his first few games.
Yeah, you know, I think he's, as you said, he's been as advertised. I mean, he's putting up 7 threes a game, and he's making 38% of them. So, you know, if you're the Bucks, that's exactly what you were trading for. You'll take that, you know, every opportunity you get. He's averaging 18 minutes, 12.7 points per game. It seems like guys, you know, while they're still getting used to him and building chemistry with him, they are trying to get him the ball in situations where he can shoot threes. Like, they are looking for him. They know what kind of weapon he is, and they are trying to feed him as often as they can. And that's, you know, that's what you would hope for and what you would expect if you're the Bucks. When you acquired him, you want him putting up 7 threes a game. You want him as somebody who his teammates are looking for and trust in, because if he can get you know, one or two to fall, then maybe, you know, he can get on a roll and really kind of just light it up. I mean, he fits into the kind of let it fly culture that the Bucks have. I mean, they put up a ton of threes against the Bulls. I want to say it was like 46. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I can momentarily, but yeah, no, they put up 49 threes. They were 17 of 49, shot 34.7% against the Bulls. Obviously there were a couple there, that came in garbage time. You know, but they will put them up, without question. And Mirotić is one of those guys who they trust to shoot a high percentage. And so far, I mean, 38%, just in his three games so far with the Bucks has been, you know, kind of what you'd hope for if you're the Bucks.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the way they handled the Bulls game without Giannis available. The Bucks moved to 3-2 in games Giannis does not play, and I think it's safe to say we will see a little more of Giannis resting here in the second half. He's got a little bit of soreness in his knee. They are going to the playoffs. They're going to have a top three seed regardless. I know they want that top seed, but it sounds like we might see more resting of Giannis and maybe a few other players as well, but it seems, though, the strategy there in that Bulls game with no Giannis was just to shoot as many threes as humanly possible, and it worked. And, you know, what's impressive about that win is that the Bulls did get up early. The Bulls were not struggling. They'd won three in a row. They just beat the Celtics, presumably at full strength, the Celtics were, by 10 points on Saturday night. They've got a recent road win over the Nets, which is a good team. They've got you know, a couple decent recent wins on the resume. The Bulls are not as bad as maybe they were earlier in the year, and yet the Bucks were still able to push past them without their star player and sort of take care of business. Are we just going to see this when Giannis is not on the floor? We're just going to see even more shooting from the perimeter, like bombs away at all times. Is that the way the Bucks are going to operate now that they've got Mirotić in the fold?
Yeah, I think so. I think we saw, you know, Malcolm Brogdon being aggressive and driving to the hoop, but he also was 4 of 7 for three. Chris Middleton was a little bit more aggressive. Those two guys, you know, led the way with 22 points apiece. You know, getting inside, Middleton got to the line a bunch. You know, Eric Bledsoe had a really quiet night, but I think it was a game where, you know, Bud kept everyone's minutes in check. I don't think anyone played more than like 29 minutes. Everyone had a nice little window of about 25. And he was able to kind of spread it around, which you know, is a positive heading into, or at least at the start of, a 5-game road trip. You want to be able to keep guys rested before flying out to the West Coast, Sacramento. But you know, depth has been a plus for the Bucks all season long. I mentioned earlier they're pretty solid 1 through 12. If you want to even go that deep, you know we saw that especially on Monday night, and I asked Pat Connaughton about it after the game, and I thought he had a pretty good quote. You know, he told me here's the quote. I've been saying it all year. We have a great team. I think some people overlook the amount of depth we have because they're not necessarily quote unquote names. It's guys that are making names for themselves. You know, if you look at our roster, I think everybody's contributed at some point in time to help us get the best record in the NBA. You know, and then he goes on to talk about how they've done a good job to maintain, you know, great camaraderie and chemistry, which doesn't always happen in the NBA because guys are playing and not playing and get back to playing and then get benched and they don't have the consistency of a role, you know, but he thinks at least in Milwaukee, everybody knows their role. They know what they're doing and they want to be a part of what they're doing. And, you know, that's pretty rare. And so, you know, that's impressive coming from a guy who, you know, at the start of the season, you know, all the way through the season has been in and out. He's contributed at a high level. Sometimes off the bench, and then he's been inactive, or, you know, I guess not inactive, but he's, you know, been a coach's decision DNP for stretches at a time. And so he came in, you know, he's definitely going to be relied upon more with George Hill out. George Hill strained his left adductor. It's a groin muscle on Saturday night, and Bud indicated that, you know, he's not just going to be out, you know, one or two games. It's going to be a little while. He didn't give a more specific timetable, but expected it to be a few games. So he won't be playing Wednesday in Sacramento. I doubt he'll play against the Lakers or Jazz. You know, he might not play at any point in this road trip. So we'll have to see what his situation is. But that should mean more opportunities for Connaughton. And, you know, we saw the Bucks sign Isaiah Kanan, you know, kind of out of the blue. on Monday night. And he already, you know, he jumped right in the first quarter and scored 6 points, took a charge. So, you know, he jumped right in, and we'll see what he's able to contribute during his 10-day contract.
Yeah, Isaiah Kane in the pride of Murray State. What a wild story that was, that he just happened to be on hand in Chicago, available, and the Bucks sign him, and he just rolls off the street, puts on a jersey, and even he's hitting from outside. That's the genius of the Bucks, what the Bucks have going on right now. Just to expound a little further on the injury situation, you talked about George Hill. I'm assuming I was right what I said earlier. We're going to see Giannis resting a little more often. Maybe there are other players who will fit that bill as well. Curious your thoughts on that. And then also, a guy we've forgotten about is Dante DiVincenzo. He's missed 24 straight games now, and he had some really early promise this season. It's the type of thing where you're not worried about the guy that's a rookie trying to make his name for himself, because the Bucks are covered. They've got guys who are coming out of the woodwork and performing, but it is turning into a little bit of a lost season for DiVincenzo now that he's just not been able to get healthy and get back on the floor. What is your thought about that situation as well?
So I think George Hill, like I mentioned, will be out a little while. Sterling Brown, I think they just wanted to give him some rest with his right wrist that he had been bothering him. And then Giannis, I fully expect he'll be back on Wednesday night. They're just kind of taking him day, giving him rest when they see the opportunity. We'll talk about that in a minute, but let's get back to Dante. I get a lot of questions about Dante. Nothing's changed. I mean, he at least since the All-Star break, I wrote about him before the All-Star break. He was getting the boot off. During the break, he was able to do some more work, get some more treatment. He's not wearing the walking boot anymore, but it's an injury that he has never dealt with before. This is his first time, and he tried to play through it for a little while there in late December, early January. We kind of had days off here and there, didn't have the walking boot on, tried to deal with it. And he was able to play. The problem was that after a practice or after a game or after some kind of workout, that's when it would flare up. That's when his heel would really bother him. And so you let it kind of cool off a little bit. And, for a day or two, and then you do it again, and it's still not where it wants to be. He's still feeling that lingering pain. They tried to give him some rest, and they gave him a G League assignment, and he played in that game. It was fine, but then he still felt the pain again, and that's why they decided to shut it down and give him some more prolonged rest, put him in the walking boot, which he put on in late January before they went to Oklahoma City to start their 5-game road trip. And he stayed in that boot almost all the time up until the week before the All-Star break, when he started to get it off a little bit. He'd wear it half the day, or he'd have it off half the day and then put it on kind of at night to let it chill out and relax and stay protected. He did a bunch of work during the All-Star break. He had a program that was set up by the team's medical staff, while he was away and they were away, to keep working on, resting and getting his heel stronger and stretches he could do and all that type of stuff. But he's out of the boot, but he's not out of the woods yet. He's still, progressing on that injury front. He still hasn't been cleared, for game action. All the time that he's been injured or has been inactive, at least recently, it's not that he's been, 100% healthy, but still inactive, which would make sense considering their depth and how many guys they have and all that, but he has been, still hurt and is still working his way back, and just isn't where he needs to be. And they're just not going to rush it. And that's generally been the perspective of the Bucks, is that they're going to be, aggressively cautious when it comes to any and all injuries, and they've done that all season. It's not just Giannis, it's not just Dante. It's, it happened with Malcolm Brogdon this season, it happened with Chris Middleton this season, that if there are opportunities for them to sit guys out when they are not 100%, like, they're going to take those. And you look at Giannis, like, some people will complain, oh, well, he's a star, and he should play every game, like, he shouldn't take nights off. And I would be totally on the other side of that argument, that you would much rather, he sits out a, quote unquote meaningless you know, game in February against the Chicago Bulls in order to get a little bit healthier, keep a few miles, you know, off the tires, and do that in the hopes that he'll be able to play more and at a higher level once the playoffs come. Like, it doesn't seem like that's all that crazy to me. He's missed 5 games this season. The knee has been a subject of scrutiny going back to, you know, last summer when he didn't play for the Greek national team. Last year under Jason Kidd, Joe Prunty, you know, same medical team, they watched the knee and they sat him out a bunch to keep the load off of his knee and make sure that he wasn't putting on too many miles. Obviously, he played a ton of minutes when he did play. Bud has been better, and the team has been better about giving him opportunities to play less. He's not, you know, putting up so many games of 38, 39, 40 minutes per game. He definitely hasn't had the same workload in terms of minutes, but he also hasn't missed as many games, and they haven't been because of this knee up until recently. He's missed 5 games this season. One was because of a concussion. The second was neck soreness. The third was a bruised hip and a strained quad. And then recently it's been the knee. And so I think that you want to make sure that a guy who's basically 7 feet tall and uses his athleticism to a high degree, you know, jumping a lot and dunking and all that stuff, you really want to protect his knees. I think, you know, he's the cornerstone of the franchise. And, you know, anytime you can, you know, put less wear and tear on his knees, whether you win or lose, and they're 3-2 in games he hasn't played, anytime you can do that, you do it. Because even if it somehow leads to the Bucks falling from the 1 seed to the 2, you would rather have the 2 seed and Giannis fully healthy in the playoffs than have the 1 seed and have him wear out, when you need him most.
Before I let you go, I wanted to flash back a little over a week now to the All-Star game. You saw it in Charlotte in person. Of course, Team Giannis faltering in the fourth quarter, possibly robbing Giannis of an MVP trophy. He had an outstanding night. Plenty of offensive performances to go around. The one thing I think everybody's going to remember is the alley-oop dunk, the bounce pass dunk from Steph Curry to Giannis, who flew through outer space to come up with the ball and throw it down. That's sort of the highlight of the 2019 All-Star game. You were there for all the festivities. You saw the Saturday night stuff, the Chris Middleton struggling in the three-point competition. You saw the celebrity game with Mark Lazary, Ray Allen. Lots of representatives, Mike Budenholzer and the coaching staff were there. A lot of Bucks representatives. What are one or two takeaways you're going to remember from 2019 All-Star weekend?
You know, I think the All-Star weekend was fun. I mean, that's kind of just what it's made to be. It's made to be fun. It's made to be enjoyable. There's parties, there's events, there's, you know, not a lot of, you know, crazy high intensity. Just everybody's there to have fun and enjoy what's going on. I think, you know, the game was fun. I mean, you look at, you know, the Giannis dunks, the Paul George, you know, step backs on James Harden, the definitely intentional step backs on James Harden. The way that Dame Lillard was jacking up like deep threes and knocking them down, Team LeBron, the way they were able to kind of turn things around and win the game. I mean, it was all just kind of an enjoyable experience. You know, you don't really remember the outcome of the game as much as you remember, you know, the highlights. And I think that Giannis, it was kind of interesting to see the way that he, you know, approached it, because for much of the season, you ask him about the MVP or personal accolades, he's like, oh, all I care about is winning. All I care about is, you know, my team. But when you put him in an All-Star game, you know, he immediately was like, oh man, I had the MVP through three quarters. Like, I was the MVP. And then, you know, the game kind of shifted and went the other way. And, you know, the MVP usually goes to a player on the winning team, and his team didn't win. So, you know, he actually cared about that personal accomplishment, which you don't usually see from him. I kind of enjoyed that part of it. But, you know, his performance just underscores just how much of a, you know, star he is, and how much he does belong among those top players in the NBA. you know, I think we'll have plenty of opportunities to see Team LeBron versus Team Giannis in the future, in All-Star games. And you know, I think it'll be fun to see that quote unquote rivalry continue.
Yeah, it's always set up as a binary with players that it's always the assumption that they don't care about the individual stuff, but only the team stuff. I think two things can be true. He obviously cares about winning, but I'm pretty sure that if you asked Giannis and he were truthful, he would want this NBA MVP award, for which he is one of the front runners, if not the front runner at this point. Kind of saw a little shift over the last couple of weeks. I think Giannis may have snuck past James Harden again in the court of popular opinion for that award. The Bucks will get to see LeBron in a more official capacity on March 1st. The Bucks will be in LA. Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Journal Sentinel, about to hit the road west on the road trip. Bucks will be in Sacramento Wednesday night, LA, the Jazz Saturday night, and in Utah before a visit to Phoenix. It's a tough, quick road trip. There's four games in a tight window here. And Phoenix, of course, one of the more disappointing losses, if you could consider a team with only 14 of them to have any disappointing losses. But that setback at Pfizer Forum very early in the season, Bucks will get a chance to atone for that. Matt Velasquez, if the Bucks win their next two games, they will have more wins than any team since that 2001 team, and it'll only be March 1st. It's pretty crazy, man. Have a safe flight out west.
Oh yeah, thanks. I'm looking forward to getting out of the cold.
Yes, we all are looking forward to that. Thanks for joining us. We will chat with you again in a couple weeks. Oh, I've got my Eric Bledsoe interview next time we chat. So we'll reconvene about this time next week, and we'll also have a little Eric Bledsoe audio at the end of that one.
Oh, man, can't wait.
All right, I'll talk to you then. See ya.